You'll be here just across the aisle from me. We'll both take care of Mr. Draper for the time being. I don't know what your goals are, but don't overdo it with the perfume. Keep a fifth of something in your desk. Mr. Draper drinks rye. Also, invest in some aspirin, band-aids, and a needle and thread. Rye's Canadian, right? You better find out. He may act like he wants a secretary, but most of the time they're looking for something between a mother and a waitress. And the rest of the time, well.
Breakthrough opportunity or dead-end busy work. Millions of women have held the position of secretary, withstanding criticism for abandoning their sphere of the home, weathering the dubious advice of secretarial guidebooks, and seeing their fictional selves achieve stardom in shows like Mad Men. Lynn Perrell is a longtime secretary. She has written a new book entitled Swimming in the Steno Pool, a Retro Guide to Making It in the Office, which is being called by the New York Times Book Review a light, wry history of the secretarial profession. And it's a great pleasure to welcome Lynn Perrell to the roundtable.
Oh, Joe, thank you. The pleasure's all mine.
Because of shows like Mad Men, give us a sense of the stereotype that secretaries deal with.
Well, I think one of the longest-lasting stereotypes that the secretary has had to deal with is that of the office wife. The phrase actually gets started in the 1920s, and the idea is that the secretary is a person who does everything that a wife will do for her husband only at the office and without there being any kind of sexual overtones. Of course, the problem is that popular culture immediately picks up on all those sexual overtones. And it's something that's it's really endemic to this period of time from, say, the 1920s when secretaries really started to be all female. Prior to that, they were mostly men. And there's this duo of the one female secretary to the one almost always male boss and almost always female secretary. So there's this dynamic duo in the office with this idea that, the secretary is supposed to do sorts of little housekeeping things for her boss, dusting his desk before he comes in the morning, making sure that he's eating a proper breakfast, all these kinds of crazy things that these secretarial guidebooks from the mid-century talk about.
When you look at the evolution of the secretary, how much of that is a stereotype that is still exists, and how much of it has transitioned away from that?
Well, I think a lot of it has transitioned away from it in terms of the fact that the duo of one male boss and one female secretary is just, you know, shattered pretty much by the 80s due to two things. There's the advent of the second wave of feminism in the late 60s and early 70s, and then there's the advent of technology. So what happens is that feminism helps open the professional schools to women. So there are a lot of women working as secretaries prior to that time who normally would have gone on to be a professional themselves, but because there wasn't the opportunity or because they were shunted into the secretarial programs, they didn't have the opportunity. So suddenly a lot of women who would have been secretaries aren't secretaries. And then at the same time, there's technology, which with the advent of word processing systems, especially in the 80s, suddenly one person can do the work of many people. And once you have that one person doing the work of many people, she suddenly doesn't have any time anymore to do all the errand running, dusting and buying presents for the boss's husband and all that kind of stuff that secretaries were expected sometimes to have in their job description. Now, of course, what does still exist is the whole problem of sexual harassment, but it's a different dynamic now in the office, because you're just as likely to have a female boss and a male admin assistant than just always, you know, constantly the male boss and female secretary.
There's a scene in Mad Men where Don Draper calls Peggy in the middle of the night on a weekday to not only pick him up, but to pay the bail to get him out of jail after he has this accident where he's drunk with his mistress. So
I remember.
I assume these, because of the realism of the show, that these are things you hear from secretaries.
When women office workers started to gather in organizations like Women Office Workers, acronym WOW, and 9to5, and organizations that were sort of like based on feminist ideals. Well, not necessarily based on feminist ideals, but the organizations drew from the feminist movement this idea of like gathering together in, you know, power in numbers. When I actually had a contest to find out what the worst thing secretaries had been asked to do, and there's all kinds of crazy examples in my book. Oh, you know, picking up the boss's wife at the hospital after she's had a baby, cleaning the boss's false teeth. I mean, just insane, crazy stuff. So I think that actually getting a call, you know, Don calling Peggy in the middle of the night to come and rescue him, so to speak, is possibly, I mean, a bit of an exaggerated truth, but not all that much.
And again, this goes back to the whole work wife thing, right? That there is an obligation to that person.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, you are the office wife. You are the person who is responsible for the boss and for, you know, being his right-hand woman, so to speak, and being there at his beck and call. Now, you know, this is what the ideal secretary was supposed to have been, but, you know, whether or not anybody was actually functioning that way, you know, is another thing altogether, because I'm absolutely positive that there were many women working, you know, prior to the 70s and 80s who just completely rolled their eyes at these kinds of ideas. And I'm also sure that there were plenty of male bosses who knew very well that they would never, ever take advantage of their secretarial staff that way.
You write in the book, and it's interesting, the history of that term, a term that dates back to the 1800s, where as administrative assistants in the wake of the Civil War.
Well, yeah, they were clerks, actually. So what happens is, originally, the entire office is male. Originally, when you know, business in America gets going, everybody in the office is male, from the office boy all the way up to the top. And what happens with that is that if you start as the office boy, you can reasonably expect to someday become the boss, because basically you learn how to do absolutely everything in the office. You learn, you know, you work in the mailroom, you work in accounting, you do this, that, and the other. So you know everything about the business. So after the Civil War, during the Civil War, the Treasury Department, they suddenly have a shortage of workers, because men who normally would be working are out, of course, fighting on the battlefield surrounding Washington, D.C. So what happens is, the head of the Treasury Department has this great idea that he can hire women to come in and trim paper bills. He figures that women have little dainty hands and they can handle scissors just as well as men can. And what happens is, they in fact can do this, and of course they will do it for less money. So these are the first female office workers in the U.S., the women in the Treasury Department around the time of the Civil War, and their office clerks. So as time goes on and this realization sets in that you can hire women for less than men, they start to bring in more and more women into offices. And then by the time of the First World War, when men again go away, that's pretty much when women take over the clerical and secretarial positions in America's offices.
You've been a secretary for a long time. What do you think about the profession?
It's really interesting, because I think it's really, well, it has. It's absolutely changed tremendously. You know, when I started, and I'm somebody who just basically started because when I was in, after I had graduated from college, I came to San Francisco with my degree in art history, and I actually started working in an art gallery as an arts administrator, and realized that that wasn't for me, and then just started doing word processing, because at the time, in the 80s, you could make a lot of money being a word processor, and it was awesome. You could, you know, go to school and you know, do a zine, which I did, and, you know, write books and do all sorts of stuff on sort of a shorter schedule that paid a lot of money. But, of course, that's completely gone, or almost completely gone, as more and more people do their own typing, as voice-activated technology has, like, just become so incredibly accurate. So parts of the profession are just completely different. And I've been actually working as a secretary for a secretary proper for like the past couple of years. And it's really interesting because, you know, my day, I rarely do. Taking dictation from the boss and typing up letters used to be what occupied most of a secretary's day, say through the, you know, through the 50s, 60s, 70s. But then with, you know, dictaphones and, again, word processing, that all started to change. And, you know, what I do now is there's just a lot of, I think, at one point would have been considered almost, you know, lower echelons of management in terms of, like, putting together meetings. I get to do a lot of different stuff. None of it would be anything what a secretary in the 60s or 70s would do.
What do you make of Mad Men? When you see the show, when you see the depictions, do you cringe or do you enjoy the nostalgia of it?
I wouldn't say that I enjoy the nostalgia of it. I definitely love the eye candy of the retro fashions and the office settings and just seeing all the different mid-century furniture and clothing and all of that. But for me, and I know a lot of women who do cringe when they watch it, and what I usually wind up telling them is that, you know, they have to stick with it because what I used to say always was, watch Peggy. You know, watch Peggy. I mean, she's going places. I mean, and the entire show in and of itself, what I think and what I tell women is it's just this totally great explanation of why the second wave of feminism had to happen. So I really enjoy it. I mean, I like the eye candy. I like the soap opera-y aspects. And, you know, I think that it's really smart. I mean, I think it's really smart in that I think it actually depicts a really interesting time in history where all these gender roles are changing.
The name of the book is Swimming in the Steno Pool, a retro guide to making it in the office. It is published by Norton. Lynn Perrell, a great pleasure. I thank you very much for being with us.
Oh, thank you, Joe.
Thanks so much. Again, the title of the book, Swimming in the Steno Pool, a retro guide to making it in the office. It is published by Norton. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.